Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Kilmeade with Fox News Channel. You're listening to Audrey Russo on Real Talk. Do not change that dial.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. The left has decided there is no debate on transgenders or gender dysphoria. They are trying to ensure that the only voice drowned out of the conversation is the voice of reason. Well, that's exactly what you will hear in this topic, the voice of reason, brought to you by my next guest. Dr. Michelle Critella is president of the American College of Pediatricians and a general pediatrician with a special interest in behavioral pediatrics. She was elected to the college's board of directors in 2005, and prior to being elected president in 2015, Dr. Critella chaired the Adolescent Sexuality Committee, the Pediatric Psychosocial Development Committee, and the Scientific Policy Committee. In these roles, she became one of the college's chief researchers, writers, and spokespersons on the issues of pediatric mental and sexual health. She is regularly consulted by Breitbart News, FRC, One News Now, Relevant Radio, and many others. Her article, Gender Dysphoria in Children and Suppression of Debate, was published in the 2016 summer issue of Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome to Dr. Michelle Critella. Well, welcome, Dr. Michelle. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Wonderful to be here this morning.
Thank you. Well, we're going to jump right in here. The transgender ideology has, well, it looks like it's infiltrated the medical community. Would you share how this has occurred and how, in your professional opinion, it is responsible for large-scale child abuse?
Certainly. What many people, most people don't realize is that the medical guilds, as well as the psychiatric and psychological guilds in this country and internationally, have their policies written by a handful of their members. Typically, they're written by small committees. In the case of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is on the opposite side as my organization, in the Academy's situation, their pro-transgender policy was written and approved and passed by anywhere between 12 to no more than 30 pediatricians. And most of those committees which passed it, they are self-selecting, meaning that you end up with people of the same political worldview and groupthink that completely contradicts science. When they come out with their statements, however, the mainstream media is told, we represent over 60,000 pediatricians, and this is what we believe. The fact of the matter is, you only know what the 30 pediatricians at the top want you to believe, not what their thousands of members actually believe based on their clinical and scientific expertise.
So many of the physicians that don't agree, they're not being heard.
Not only are we not being heard, we are punished. As president of the American College of Pediatricians, we are the one non-sectarian physician organization that has spoken out. And so I hear from physicians on the left, physicians and therapists who have called me and said, you know, we are pro-abortion, we are pro-gay marriage, so we differ with you there, but thank you. Thank you so much for speaking out, because if we were to talk about the science, we would be fired or harassed. One example is Dr. Kelly Levenstein. She happens to be a professor of social work at the University of Michigan. She came out in the Federalist protesting the transgendering of children because her own daughter fell prey to it. Wow. And as a result, Dr. Levenstein received death threats. She lost friends, colleagues, significant harassment and penalties at work. So it truly is a top-down tyranny. And the unfortunate thing is, by taking over medicine and the fields of medicine and psychiatry at the uppermost levels, those are the guilds that our courts and politicians and education system turn to. So once you lose the leadership at the top of medicine and psychology, you are now losing the leadership of these other public institutions.
Yeah, exactly. It's getting more and more frightening, right, because it's a departure from reality. Many college students are increasingly pressured to let go of reality, because it is letting go of reality, right, and to accept the transgender narrative and they even use transgender pronouns, which of course now is punishable if you use them improperly.
Right.
You know, it's insane. If you were in medical school today, how would you respond to this kind of pressure?
You know, as medical students, you are under the microscope. So I think most med students who want to cling to reality and authentic science could very carefully ask important questions, such as, well, where are the twin studies demonstrating that people are born this way? Where are the brain studies that prove this is predetermined in the brain before birth? Now, it of course would be hard for a medical student to know that they would have to know, right, that the studies that the other side puts forth actually disprove the claims. So it requires a certain amount of knowledge that sadly most medical students won't have, and I think that's perhaps the bigger problem, is that the reason this is so successful at the college and pre-professional level is because America's education system has done away with critical thinking at the university level decades ago, really, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
No one understands, no one's aware of philosophical fallacies, logical fallacies anymore. What the college student of today and increasingly high school students of today are actually engaging in is, you hurt my feelings, therefore you're wrong, and might makes right. You know, it's all about microaggression and, and punishment and rising up. And instead of true analytical, critical thinking, the rules of logic, true scientific observation, and a respectful debate, these are the art forms that civilized society is based on. That has all been lost. So transgenderism is a natural outcome of, you know, this perhaps deeper issue of a complete absence of critical thinking.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. My background's in education, and I've seen it for years, for decades going on, where, you know, you have young people in, you know, getting master's degrees. They aren't capable of a debate. They cannot. No. They've been indoctrinated, and it's frightening. You know, despite the insistence of the left, is there any truth that a person can ever be trapped in the wrong body?
Other than a baby boy who is in utero, no, a boy cannot be trapped in a woman's body, right? And he's, I'm sorry, that's a joke. You know, I used to be trapped. I've had male colleagues of mine say, well, you know, I was trapped in a woman's body once then I was born. So apart from that,
that was good.
Yeah, apart from that joke, no. Yeah. And here's the proof. Identical twins have the same DNA. They come from the same sperm and egg. They have 100% the same DNA. They also develop within the same mother, within the same womb. Mm-hmm. So they are exposed to the same prenatal environment. If gender identity is hardwired either by genetics or by something in the prenatal environment, that prenatal womb, if it's hardwired solely by those before birth factors, then every single identical twin should have the same gender identity 100% of the time. But they do not. In fact, when you look at the twins, at twin studies, the majority of identical twins differ from their transgender identity. Over 70% of the time in which you have identical twins in which one identifies as transgender, the other is normal. This means that transgenderism is most influenced by post-birth experience, post-birth effects. If pre-birth effects alone determined transgender identity, 100% of identical twins, you find one identical twin who says, I'm transgender, their sibling, their identical sibling, would also identify as transgender. That does not happen. Therefore, we know it is post-birth that trumps pre-birth factors. Could there be some sort of predisposition, some sort of personality, you know, personality development in utero that just predisposes? There could be. But predisposition is not predetermination. And that's true of virtually every behavioral trait we have as human beings. Complex behaviors, thinking, feelings, these things are not hardwired within us. And it should be obvious to anyone based on just basic human experience.
Right. You know, I know that gender dysphoria, we used to treat that, okay? But the psychological community now, instead of treating it, you know, your mind is telling you something that does not match reality. Right, exactly. So now we have to bring the mind back to reality. Now we're helping, you know, it's as if we're giving chocolate bars out to diabetics. We would never do that, right? But why are we doing this?
Right, exactly. And interestingly, although there are folks on the left, there are also LGBT identified folks on the left who are deeply concerned and deeply opposed to the transgender agenda. However, there are still similarities in terms of psychology. and this gets to what you mentioned, we're treating psychology back in 1973 when the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from the list of mental disorders, shifted their focus. They, prior to 1973, the American Psychiatric Association basically held to the belief that normal is that which functions according to design.
Right.
Our sexual attractions facilitate sexual reproduction. So that's the norm. Well, in 1973, under pressure from gay activists who literally disrupted multiple meetings of the APA. So under political pressure, the APA essentially said, well, you know what? These people are suffering and not all of them can change. So we're going to cave in. We're no longer going to be using that definition of normal. We're no longer concerned about treating behavior in accordance with the norm. We're going to treat emotional upset. The emotional upset, that's the disorder.
Hmm.
So now take that and apply it to the person with gender identity disorder that has now been renamed gender dysphoria. Dysphoria basically means discomfort, right, emotional distress. And so the APA is saying we are treating their emotional distress by changing their body to match their abnormal thinking.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really, I mean, talk about the engineering of reality.
Yes.
Re-engineering, it turns reality on its head.
Yeah.
I mean, by this, and I'm not the only one to say this, I've written this in my position statement for the American College of Pediatricians, but Dr. McHugh and other psychiatrists have come out and said this, you know, to treat the transgender identifying person with hormones and surgery is the same as taking an anorexic person and putting them on a starvation diet and setting them up for liposuction. Or another example, there is a disorder called body dysmorphic disorder in which the person is convinced that they are ugly and they desperately want cosmetic surgery. Well, a person in that situation, you don't send them to a plastic surgeon. You work and try and identify the underlying issues. And this is what used to happen, or standard of care, for particularly, especially for children, especially for the young children who insisted that they either were the opposite sex or desperately wanted to be the opposite sex. You would have child and family therapy, because most often there is something going on within the family dynamic, and it may not, and now sadly, I mean, in some cases there is overt abuse. There is actual either physical or sexual abuse going on within the family.
Right.
More often, I am told by therapists who have treated these children in therapy, more often the children are misinterpreting. It's their subconscious mind misinterpreting that they are either unsafe or unlovable as their biological sex. They are suffering from some attachment loss to their parents. And it's not by anything malicious on the part of the parent. It's something that through therapy can be helped.
Right.
So it's, you know, instead we're being told by the activists that, you know, this is conversion therapy, electroshock therapy, and all these, you know, it's just being painted as torture. When in point of fact, it's the other side. It's the pro-transition your child side that is engaged in something on the order of Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I mean, puberty blockers.
Oh, that's incredible.
You know,
yeah.
It's insane. Puberty blockers are drugs that the gender experts, quote unquote, so-called, recommend that your young child, rather than go through therapy, actually impersonate, basically dress in drag, grow out, if they're a boy, grow out the hair, change, you know, name change everything, dress in drag, force everyone in the family and in their social circle to go along with their delusion. Yeah. And when they approach puberty, arrest their development. Because, I mean, and let's face it, if you have coached your daughter to live as a boy or coached your son to live as a girl, when they approach puberty, who wouldn't be terrified of normal development?
Sure, of course.
But where the lie is that these puberty blockers are fully reversible and harmless. And that is a lie. It's a lie because normal children have never been tested and observed on these puberty blockers.
That is, this is all very disturbing. It really is.
This is why I say it's child abuse. It's child abuse because, number one, you're cooperating with their mental illness to begin with. So psychologically, that's abusive. You're locking them into their mental illness. It's also abusive to their peers who are being forced to play along with this, because now their classmates and siblings are being taught a lie. They're being taught, gee, any of us could be trapped in the wrong body. Mm. Now, that's psychologically damaging to their peers. And when you get to the point of their maturation where Mother Nature and their bodies is going to declare the truth to them, now you put them on puberty blockers. The reason the gender experts say, oh, it's fully reversible, is because the FDA has approved puberty blockers to treat a disease called precocious puberty. Precocious puberty happens when a child begins to go through puberty younger than age 8.
Ooh.
So I think you can imagine how awful that would be to begin going through puberty at, let's say, age 5. So it's a true biological disorder, and the puberty blocker is less risky than letting that child go through early puberty at age 5.
Right.
Do you follow me?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So used in the disease precocious puberty, you can delay that precocious puberty until the child is the appropriate age, let's say around 11.
Right.
Or even till age 10. Once you take them off that puberty blocker, their natural puberty will kick back in again within the year. Now, just because that happens in a child with a disease does not mean that's the same thing will happen in a child who is biologically normal and going through natural puberty. And in the biologically normal child, you are arresting their normal brain development, their normal bone development, virtually every organ system that is impacted by, would be impacted by their normal sexual hormones is arrested. And the most concerning is we don't know the impact on the brain.
Right. The research has been done.
There is evidence that Lupron, which is the most common blocker, has been associated with memory deficits in both men and women. Again, the FDA, Lupron works in such a way that it is approved for the treatment of prostate cancer in men. It's also approved for the treatment of endometriosis in women. Mm. And we know from some long-term studies in the men and the women that this Lupron may have impact on memory deficits. This is what we're exposing our kids to. When these kids are placed at that young age on puberty blockers, and we continue to treat them as the opposite sex, when they get older, surprise, surprise, they say, yes, I really am transgender, and I want the sex change hormone.
Sure.
That, together with the blocker, permanently sterilizes them.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, this is institutional child abuse. Institutional because it's being enforced by a minority of politically driven physicians, and they're spreading and reinforced by the institutions of our political institutions, courts, and education system.
Yeah, and I'll put another element in there, the media.
Yes.
Yeah, I had shared with you an article on Breitbart News about the Times, which was extremely disturbing. But I think we could have guessed who might be behind this push for the in the gender transgender movement would be, you know, especially for on when it comes to children, would be the pedophiles and pederasts, and they seem to be gaining ground, don't they?
Yes, it's true. And they have been in the background even within the American Psychological Association. In 1999, the American Psychological Association published an article in one of its journals by psychiatric experts saying, you know, adult child sex, even in the case of incest, may not be so bad for the child. It depends.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
This was published in 1999, and in 1999, Congress actually, it was, thank goodness, it made such, it encountered such outrage in 1999 that Congress actually sanctioned the APA, and they had to recant. But those folks in the APA have not gone away. They are still there, and many of the adult transgender, most of them are men impersonating women, but many of those men impersonating women who are in favor of transitioning children also have records of abuse against women.
Mm.
And that is not coming to light.
Of course
not. It's not coming to light at all.
Sure, because sadly, mostly the leftist media is not... wouldn't be interested in all the facts, least hiding some of them. Would I be going too far in saying that not only is the transgender movement attacking the order that exists in human nature, but also the sacred institution of the family?
Oh my goodness! Of course, if there is, you know, even it just takes the if two men. If there's no difference between two men and two women, and there's no difference between same-sex couples and a married man and a woman, well then, yeah, I guess there is no such thing as a man or a woman. You know, I mean, you can look at it that way. If I just have to claim that I'm the opposite sex and I feel like woman, hear me roar. You know, doesn't matter that I have a penis,
right?
Testicles. That's completely irrelevant. If all it takes is my word, because you can't challenge my inner thinking or feelings, then there is no such thing as a man or a woman, right? We're all just this. We're all on a spectrum, and we're all androgynous and pansexual. So then there is no such thing as family. Yeah. A family is a man and a woman who come together in a mutually loving, faithful, and lifelong marriage commitment. And their love, from their love, we, and sexual reproduction from their love, we have children.
Exactly.
That is a family. That is the gold standard, the natural family.
Yeah.
Because we live in an imperfect world, when we have children who, I mean, and it's never the child's fault.
No.
Their natural family falls apart. We have things such as adoption or blended families. But again, those institutions up until 5 minutes ago recognized that children deserve the best. If they cannot have their natural family, then they deserve the closest, the situation that's going to emulate the natural family the best.
Exactly. Following natural order. But it's funny, in a time of reality TV, that we no longer love reality, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Michelle, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work?
I encourage all listeners to check out our website. It's called bestforchildren.org, www.bestforchildren.org. you can spell it out or you can use the numeral 4. It'll get you there, bestforchildren.org. We have, we cover other other topics and resources for parents as well. So I do encourage you to check us out.
Excellent. And of course, as always, I'll have that link and plus any links to follow you in social media in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find the links any information that Dr. Michelle shared with us. Thank you so much, Dr. Michelle, for taking the time to share your excellent assessments with us. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
Oh, I would love to, of course.
Awesome. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.